Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Today we turn our attention to fruits, things like strawberries and tart cherries and apples and plums. We've got all kinds of things we can talk about with you with our two guests. Larry Mueller here, by the way. My two guests, Professor Terrell Roper, UW Extension horticulturist, Professor Patty McManus, UW Extension plant pathologist, who both zero in on fruits. And I tell you what, they know, between the two of them, they know an awful lot. We found that out in past programs. If you have a question, would like to join in, we hope you will. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Patty, welcome back.
Thank you.
Terrell, nice to have you with us as well. Appreciate
it. Good to be
here. And you're on your way out of town.
I am.
This is your last, you'll be your last program with
this
us.
This will be the last program here. I hope to do this where I'm headed, though.
Yeah, and you're headed to Utah.
To Utah State University. I'll be a department head there.
Well, congratulations. You're going to be missed here for sure, but we really appreciate all you've done for us over the years. And
yeah, I'd like to second that. I'm going to miss Terrell a lot, and he's been a wonderful colleague. And our counterpart in entomology, Dan Marr, if you were here, I'm sure you would agree. And I'm sure the commodity groups, if they were in this room, they would be saying the same thing. Everyone's going to miss Terrell a great deal.
Well, I'll tell you what, he's still with us now. So let's go to the phones and see what he can do for us today.
This is your last chance.
Dan in Madison is up here first. Dan, hello to you. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What can we do for you?
I have a question about a plum tree. I planted a tree in my yard about 4 or 5 years ago from bare root, and I haven't trimmed it at all, done any pruning since I bought it, and it's just finally bearing fruit for the first time this year. And it is, I believe, it's an asexual tree; doesn't need a second to pollinate. And I guess what I'm wondering is, I've talked to a few different people about pruning, and I've kind of gotten different opinions about pruning a plum tree as opposed to any other kind of tree, apple tree or cherry tree. And I'm just wondering, do you think pruning a plum tree has any special, you know, requirements other than just general sort of pruning, you know, good practices? Or, and is there any sort of resource that I could maybe tap into to learn how to best prune my plum tree?
Sure. Yeah. Terrell?
A couple of answers to that. The objectives when pruning a plum tree are the same as pruning any other fruit tree. You want to make sure that the entire canopy is well exposed to light. That's really the business we're in farming and gardening, is capturing sunlight and allowing those leaves to turn the sunlight energy into carbohydrates. So you want to have the canopy open. You need to not have the branches so crowded that one branch is shading another. And that's the basis for good pruning. After 5 years, certainly the tree is going to need some pruning, and without seeing the tree, it's really hard for me to tell you exactly what needs to be done. We do have a resource. We have a publication called Growing Apricots, Cherries, Peaches, Plums in Wisconsin, and that's available on the web at the website is cecommerce.uwex.edu. And if you look there for that publication, the number is A2130, or you could probably just Google A2130 and find the publication. And there is a section in there on pruning those trees.
Okay. Cool.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Dan. Appreciate it. John and Gaze Mills, you are up. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
First off, you know, I've met both Terrell and Patty and Dan at the Wisconsin Apple Growers Association, and they've all, three of them, you know, been huge help to so many people in the state. It's, sorry to see you go, Terrell.
Well, thank you.
I'm in Gaze Mills, and I've got a little, like an eighth of an acre or maybe a quarter of an acre, and I wanted to do some Honeycrisp dwarf trees.
Okay.
And so I've basically two questions. One, how scab resistant is Honeycrisp? You know, is it possible maybe to try and do those organically? And secondly, what other tree would I plant? Do they need? I'm pretty sure they need cross pollination. So, what other apple tree would be good to plant with the Honeycrisp?
Well, certainly they need cross-pollination, but in Gay's Mills there are enough other apple trees around. I wouldn't get really excited about that.
Okay.
And in terms of planting Honeycrisp on a dwarfing rootstock, it's not a very vigorous tree anyway, so you need to be a little bit careful. I know up on the ridge in Gay's Mills, Sunrise Orchard has an extensive planting of Honeycrisp on Bud 9, and they've been a very good tree. It's a small tree.
Okay.
And then I'll let Patty address the scab issue.
Yeah, what about scab, Patty?
Yeah, Honeycrisp actually is fairly resistant to scab. It's not immune by any means, but certainly compared to a Macintosh or a Cortland or something like that, it's quite resistant. As far as growing organically, of course, scab is just one of many pest problems, insects and diseases. And so it certainly would be a better candidate for growing organically than, say, Cortland or Macintosh or even Gala. But there will be other challenges besides scab, and okay. It will need some treatment for scab, even in an organic program.
Sure, like copper sulfate or pure sulfur in the early part of the season before it gets too warm.
Sure.
Stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Hey, thank you so much, and good luck in Utah.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling, John. Appreciate it. Bev in Bloomer is up next. Hi, Bev.
Well, hi. How you doing? It's wonderful to get on your show finally. I've been trying to get on for several weeks. Anyway, I keep listening to... I grew up in the 30s and 40s in Quincy, Illinois, about 130 miles north of St. Louis on the Mississippi River. Mm-hmm. And I hear your people calling in all the time complaining about this bug and that bug and this disease and that disease with their plants and gardens and fruit trees and all that. The house where I lived, we had two cherry trees, big, giant cherry trees. We had a huge grape arbor about 20 feet long. We had a huge blackberry bush about 15 by 10, a gooseberry bush, and a apricot tree, plus a garden. And we never did anything, ever, except weed the garden.
So you didn't have insect issues?
No, I don't ever remember seeing a leaf on a tree that had looked like something was eating it or anything. I mean, we climbed the trees all the time, my friends and I, and picked the apricots off and ate them, and the cherries and ate them, and the blackberries and ate them. And, I mean, I just don't get it.
Well, what do you think? Do we have more insects now? And you guys, neither of you is an entomologist, but you've got some experience. Terrell, what do you think?
Well, there are at least two things that are going on here. One is with modern commerce, we have managed to spread some critters around from here to there where they didn't used to be. And I'll give as an example, my parents grew up in the Uinta Basin of Utah. And when my father was a boy, they didn't have alfalfa weevil in the Uinta Basin. They have it now, but they didn't then. The other thing is that with the advent of modern pesticides, in some cases... the natural scheme of things got disrupted. So while I suspect, even when you were a young man, that there were insects there, but they maybe didn't have the outbreaks that we see sometimes today. And I think in general, people tolerated a little bit of insect injury and a little bit of disease injury on produce more than we tolerate now.
Yeah. Patty, anything to add to that?
No, I was just going to comment on the tolerance issue. I think we demand an awful lot from fruit these days. So
yeah, perhaps more than we did in the 30s and 40s. Mm-hmm. Well, there you have it. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And want to move on to some more callers here because lots online here. You can join us, by the way, at 800-642-1234. In Madison at 263-1890. And Thomas in Manitowoc's up next. Hi, Thomas.
Hello, I've got two yellow sweet cherry trees that are real nice and healthy, and they're probably 18 feet tall now. And being in Manitowoc, I pushed it a little bit into another zone. And one year we had three cherries on one tree, and that was it. Are there any hints at all to get these trees to bear more fruit?
Are these old trees, or are they?
No, they're probably 6 years old now.
Six years old, real
fast,
and they're 18 feet tall. Okay.
Yeah.
Are you fertilizing them with nitrogen?
No, I haven't fertilized them at all.
Oh, okay. Well, there are a couple of tricks, although we're a little late in the season for that. There's two things that would encourage fruiting and flower bud induction in sweet cherries. One is to position the limbs. I suspect that the limbs are growing pretty upright in that tree, and they need to be bent towards horizontal. If you could get them 60 degrees off of vertical, that will encourage them to set flower buds for next year, although we're probably a little late in this season to encourage flower buds for 2009. The other thing you can do, and again, we're late on this. This should be done about the time that the trees are blooming, is to make a single girdle all the way around the tree at the base of the tree. Just take a sharp utility knife and about a foot above the soil line, cut all the way around. Now, you may think you're going to kill the tree by doing that, but you won't. What you really do is disrupt movement of carbohydrates into the roots and keeps the carbohydrates up in the upper part of the tree. And the other part of the response is it releases ethylene, and ethylene will encourage induction of flower buds for the next year's crop.
Okay.
So keep that in mind for 2009. If you do those two items about the time that the trees are blooming, it will definitely encourage flower bud formation for the 2010 crop.
All right. Thanks a lot. That's great.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it, Tom. Ben in Verona, your turn. Hi, Ben.
Hey, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Say I've got a plum tree. It's about a 10-year-old plum tree I planted when I first moved into my house. It's been it's turned into a real beautiful tree. I planted it when it was just a little guy. I got over at Walmart or something, and it's got these little plums on it. But it's this year I noticed two things. It didn't flower like it normally does in the spring. It's got a real brilliant flowering, white flowers that come on for about 2 weeks and they're gone. But also it picked up a couple of branches that got these moths. I can't remember the name. I remember calling in and talking to Phil Pelletier about it. But I sprayed them with an insecticide, and it said it was safe for, all these trees and everything. And it did the trick, and I removed the moths. But also I noticed I think the branches with the moths all the way down in the tree, it almost seems like half the tree is dead now. It's just, there's no leaves on any of the branches, but half of it's still there. I'm not sure if it was insecticide or maybe something's going on, but before I sprayed it, I noticed it hadn't flowered the way it normally does. So I'm not sure if there's anything I can do for it. Or
all right, what's going on? Okay, Patty, you want to start?
Well, I'm just thinking about, so you're saying that half the tree is dead and the other half isn't?
Yeah. But, definitely the two branches where I sprayed the moths, there's no leaves on them. And then I've just noticed there's just a lot of other branches lately, too. There's no leaves on them. So I'm,
Well, one possibility, of course, is winter injury. I don't know how well if you're seeing any other dieback on the
well
tree.
It's good you brought that up, because I did have some kids were climbing on it and broke some branches off, and there's some skid marks up the bark, and you could see where they were crawling up the tree, and that had happened maybe last year. I noticed it when I was spraying those moths this year, so
yeah, you're gonna have to be more of a curmudgeon and say, "You dang kids, stay out of my trees."
But, yeah,
I don't think that one of the commercial insecticides would have defoliated the tree, but maybe Terrell has some better ideas here.
Well, my idea is that we had a pretty dry summer last summer, and that might have put the tree under stress. And if it had a heavy crop in 2007, that would inhibit flower bud formation for 2008. And then when we combine that with a pretty cold winter, I think all of those things combined have limited the flowers that you would have seen this year and may have caused the dieback as well. So what do you do about it? I would cut out the dead wood and
hopefully it'll grow back.
Take good care of it.
Maybe.
And hopefully it'll continue to grow and it'll flower next year.
Can I prune that? Should I wait till winter to prune that, or can I prune it any time? Or
you could prune out that deadwood any time.
Oh, okay. And then normally for normal pruning, should I wait till winter time to do that? Or
yeah, the best time to do that is February, March, April, along through there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
All right. Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. We're zeroing in on fruits, fruit trees and strawberries and all kinds of things relating to fruits with Terrell Roper, UW Extension horticulturist, and Patty McManus, UW Extension plant pathologist. I'm Larry Mueller. Keisha Mabra, our on-air producer, and you are listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Patty McManus and Terrell Roper answering your fruit questions today. Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk. And we can talk disease, anything actually relating to the maintenance and growing and harvest and everything else connected with trees. Not so sure about all the insect issues, although we might be able to tackle a few of those. But whatever your question, we hope you'll join us at 800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And John in Dodgeville is up next. Hi, John.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Question about mulberry trees.
Okay.
I discovered one on my farm, and it is easily 15 feet tall now, but it has never fruited. Is there a reason?
Well, my first question is there a problem with that? Most people think that mulberry trees are dirty. They drop fruit all over, and the birds eat the fruit, and then we have mulberry trees spread all over. So,
it's my favorite fruit. I love mulberries. When we were kids, that it always brought me back to when we were kids. We had a huge one that we used to climb and eat all the fruit. We were just like the birds, you know.
Now, the first question is: does it flower?
What's that?
Does it flower?
No, it's never flowered.
Doesn't flower or produce fruit? I don't know.
Must there be multiple trees in the area in order to get?
No.
No.
You'd need, well,
what's that?
I talked about this in my class this last semester, and it's just been long enough ago that I've forgotten the details.
Oh, all time.
There's a pretty good article about mulberries on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
There are a couple of different species. There's a native species, and I forget if that's the red or the white one, and then the other one is the one that's used for the silkworm industry, but you've stumped me. I can't think of a reason why a true mulberry tree wouldn't flower and fruit.
This okay. is a long shot, but there are viruses that will prevent plants from flowering and fruiting. Generally, you'll see some other sorts of symptoms, though, with that and a gradual decline of the tree. So if it's quite healthy otherwise, I would...
You
well,
sure?
It's a very, very healthy tree. It was very small when I discovered it. Now it's, like I said, it's huge. It's
and you're
beautiful.
Absolutely sure it's a mulberry?
That was my next question. You might want to get a branch of that into your county extension office, and they can take some photos of it and send it in to our woody ornamental people.
I've had other people look at it without telling them. I go, hey, what kind of tree is that? Oh, mulberry. And so I did plant four whips this year. How long does it take for a mulberry tree to get to the fruiting stage?
Quite a while. It's going to be 6 or 7 years at least.
Oh, God, I'll be dead by then.
And the more vigorous they are, the longer it will take for them to flower and fruit.
Okay. You have a reason to hang in there.
keep going, John. Keep that heart ticker going. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Oh, boy. Erin at Hartford, your turn. Hi, Erin.
Hi. I have a question for you. My husband and I bought a house in Hartford in a newer subdivision, and the land used to be a farm, but apparently they built our house in the rock pile of the farm, and I'm wondering if there's any kind of fruit trees that are okay, that do better or worse in clayey, rocky soil. And the other thing is, I'm not really a gardener. I kind of have a gangrene thumb. So if there's something that's a little bit more forgiving.
What is the property like? Is it a very shaded area or do you have
no
wide
terrain.
Open?
It's a brand new subdivision. We have a
wide
little
open.
Tree that
okay.
doesn't, I mean, we just planted it. There's no shade around it. It's very, very sunny.
Okay.
Well, fruit trees will grow in some pretty marginal soils.
Okay.
As long as the soil is well-drained, you stand a fighting chance.
Okay.
And the area where I grew up what they call soil there, we would call a gravel pit.
Okay.
So fruit trees will grow in pretty gravelly soil as long as it's well-drained and as long as they have enough water. Now, in terms of something that's easier to grow than something else, purple plums are pretty easy, like Mount Royal or Italian. The scab-resistant apples, what you might do is look through our publication, Home Fruit Cultivars for Southern Wisconsin, again, available on the Extension website, and that would give you some recommendations for cultivars that have been tested in Southern Wisconsin that we feel pretty confident would do well here. The publication number is A2582.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And on to Peter in Bayfield. Hi, Peter.
Hi. Thanks for letting me on the show here. I'm a integrated pest management intern for the Eco Apple Project, which is actually a UW Extension program for growers throughout the state. And I guess I'd like to make some comments that I've noticed here on I'm actually sitting in an orchard right now, but pest pressure, you know, a lot of the insects that feed on our fruit trees are native to the region, insects like plum curculio and codling moth and apple fly maggot will originate in hawthorns and wild cherries and wild plums. And up in northern Wisconsin, our orchards are surrounded by forests, which are just loaded with these wild wild trees. And so I guess I was wondering if you could make, and I don't know if this has been brought up already, but make some comments for the listeners about how integrated pest management can be utilized in kind of a home or smaller orchard setting. You know, we have our traditional conventional methods of orchard management, and then we have organic standards, and some of those chemicals, even in the organic realm, can be pretty harsh. Lime sulfur is by no means a benign fungicide, and so I was wondering if you could speak to how IPM can be a beneficial application.
Okay, well, nice to hear from you, Peter. Yeah, I really think sort of an integrated pest management program on a small scale is the way to go for most backyard fruit growers. And Terrell, just a moment ago, was answering a question about soil and site selection. So certainly for fruit crops, you want a well-drained site. So that's a decision that has to be made even before you buy the fruit plant, no matter what it is. There are a number of different varieties of different fruits out there. So for apples, we have scab-resistant varieties. And so if you get a scab-resistant variety, or at least one that's not highly susceptible to scab, you can control diseases to a great extent that way. Of course, there will be some other problems that crop up from time to time. Sanitation, and that means just picking up dead fruit and dead branches, pruning out dead branches, because a lot of pests, both insects and diseases, will overwinter in those dead tissues. Pruning properly so that you get good air circulation, that will reduce the conditions that are favorable for diseases and also for insects. You had mentioned the reservoir hosts out in the woodlots, and homeowners don't have a lot of power over what they can do outside of their yard. But if you do have an adjacent woodlot and you do have permission to go in there and take out some things like wild plums, that might be worth it. It's certainly not easy. There's a lot of work, a lot of labor entailed with that. But I guess another one that comes to mind is in yards, sometimes we tend to go hog wild with fertilizers. And nitrogen in particular can make plants more susceptible to diseases. It makes them very leafy and lush, and that's what diseases like to eat, or pathogens like to eat.
Now, the flip side to that is that because we have these reservoirs, trying to control insect pests like codling moth, for example, is very difficult because they're very happy living off in the woods, and there's fruit out there typically for them to lay eggs in, and so to try to control them,
using non-chemical approaches in a backyard garden is more challenging than it is in a 40-acre orchard.
Yep. Good points. Thanks, Peter. Appreciate the call. Jim in Shattuck, it's your turn. Hi, Jim.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a moon gold and a sun gold apricot trees that I planted in the year 2000, and I have never gotten production from them. A couple of years they've set a few fruit, but the fruit never matured. They dropped. Should I have any reasonable expectation of those trees producing in this area, or would I be better off getting rid of them and replacing them with something else? And depending upon your answer, I may have a follow-up question on replacement suggestions.
Sure.
Well, moon gold and sun gold have never been very high on my list of apricot cultivars. The fruit quality is marginal at best. The best apricots for our area are out of the Harrow, Ontario breeding program. And all of the cultivars begin with H-A-R. Probably the best is Harval, H-A-R-V-A-L. And there's Harlane and Harcott. And, there's a whole series of them. And I think if you did a Google search for Harval or Harcott, that you could find a nursery that sells those. Are they going to be hardy in Shattuck? I'm not 100% sure. And then the other problem with apricots is they bloom so early in the spring, and that far north, you always run the risk of freezing the flowers. So there might be other fruits that would be better suited. And if you like stone fruits, the purple plums would probably be the best choice in your area, along with tart cherries. And there are some newer tart cherries from Hungary. And Patty's going to have to help me with the name. I'm just drawing a blank all of a sudden. that are red juiced and red fleshed, and they're sweeter than our standard Montmorency tart
Balaton.
Cherry. Balaton. There it is. B-A-L-A-T-O-N. And those are reasonably available in nurseries. And I think that you'd like the fruit.
Thank you. Those are excellent suggestions. Now, and you kind of fell into my follow-up question I was going to ask. I already have a Meteor cherry and a North Star cherry, and they produced for the first time last year, and we found them to be excellent for cooking and for preserves. This year they're not bearing, I guess, which is kind of common with the way they behave. So my question is this. Is it advisable to plant a number of tart cherry trees so that one will have greater assurance that in any given year at least one or two of them will be producing, or do they all tend to bear the same year and then all tend to skip the same years?
Yeah. Under good environmental conditions, tart cherries would flower and fruit every year. They don't tend to biennial bear the way apples and some other fruit crops do. I think that you're probably suffering from the same conditions that have shortened the tart cherry crop in Door County: a cold winter, crummy weather during bloom, some frosty weather during bloom. So I don't think that what happened last year with your crop has anything to do with the short crop this year.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Jim, for your call. Appreciate it. Scott in Watertown, you're up next. Hi, Scott.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I have a flowering crab apple that I planted 8 or 10 years ago, and I don't remember the cultivar at the time, but I'm sure it's a dwarf size tree. But I'm getting a lot of basil sprouts coming from the roots as far as 3 or 4 feet from the base of the tree. And usually I can just trim them back with the lawnmower, but I'm wondering what is the best way to take care of those. I'm thinking of putting some mulch around it, putting a little flower bed, and so the cutting them with the lawnmower wouldn't be an option anymore, but they seem to be really, really taken over, and I'm wondering what the best way to take care of that is.
I wish I had good news for you.
That's kind of what I was afraid of.
There isn't any good way to deal with those. It's a function of the rootstock that it was grafted onto. And for crab apples, there's really no way of knowing what they use. They're often on seedling rootstocks. Sometimes they're on M7 that suckers profusely.
Uh-huh.
The best way, the only way to deal with them that I know of is to take a pair of pruning shears out and cut them off and just keep doing it, and they'll keep coming back up. And
yeah, I don't have much of an issue with them on the trunk of the tree. I've, you know, used some pretty good pruning techniques on it, and but they sure seem to like coming up right at the ground level, right at the, like you said, at the root graft, and also a couple feet out on the root. So I guess mechanically taking care of them is what the only way to do it, then.
That is, but putting some mulch around the tree out a couple of feet from the trunk is still a good horticultural practice, and I would suggest you do that.
Yep.
Right. Yeah, just be sure to keep the mulch away from the actual base of the tree.
Yep.
You don't want that remaining wet for long periods of time.
Right. Very good. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Scott, for your call. And Bill in Scales Mound, it's your turn next. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I have some raspberries. They're called Royal Purple out of New England. And the first few years I've had them, they really had great results. They're shutting out new shoots and so forth. But the past few years, at this time of the year, right now it's starting, some of the leaves start to turn yellow, then they turn brown, and they dehydrate and they crumple off. Now, I don't know if that's a fungus or not. It seems probably something like that, but I don't know what to use on it to stop it.
Have you gone out and tried to tug the plants out of the ground just to make sure that the roots are intact and healthy?
No, but they come back every year.
Okay.
Does this bear fruit in the summer or in the fall or both?
It bears fruit now. It's just starting. The flowers are all fertilized and they're starting to form berries.
Okay. Is it the primal canes, the canes that just came up this year that turned brown, or is it the flora canes, the canes that grew last year that turned
last
brown?
Last year, last year mostly, yeah. The older ones will go first.
Okay.
But the young ones don't always bear fruit, so.
Well, yeah, the primacanes that come up, the canes that are coming up here in 2008 will go through the winter, and then they'll bear fruit next year.
Correct.
Verticillium is a possibility. That's a soil-borne fungus. raspberries are susceptible. It won't kill them outright. It does tend to kill older shoots first. This might be a good candidate to take into your county extension office, and then they might want to send it on into the disease clinic for analysis. Just having trouble figuring out what it can be just based on what you said.
Well, I do have plastic, landscaping plastic around them. I don't know if that has any effect.
Yeah, that will hold in moisture more than you want. That would favor something like Phytophthora, which is another root rot, which can cause a general yellowing of the leaves and a collapse of the entire cane eventually.
I really hate to bother the county agent because this is farmland, and they're so busy with people with, you know, big crops.
Yeah, but there may be... See, which county are you in?
A master gardener, maybe.
Yeah, the master gardeners. Which county are you in, Bill?
Joe Davies.
Oh, in Illinois.
Oh, you're in Illinois. Okay.
Right across the border.
Right across the
I'll bet they have a master gardener program in your county, and if you called the county extension office and explained what you needed, they could point you in the right direction.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. I'm sure they have a master gardener program. I know they have a master gardener program in Illinois, whether or not in that particular county, I'm not sure. Gary in Black Creek, your turn. Hi, Gary.
Thanks for such a good program.
Thank you.
I've got a question on pruning pear trees. I planted some pear trees maybe 2 years ago, and they seem to be doing well. But I've read where if you prune them, you're getting some susceptibility to fire blight. I think fire blight. Are you supposed to prune pear trees?
Sure, you should prune them, but at the best time to do that would be in February or March for a couple of reasons. One being that you can just see what you're doing better because there's not a lot of leaves in the way. There's not mosquitoes in the way either, which is a tremendous problem
right now.
But as far as fire blight is concerned, the pathogen, even if it's there, it's not active, and so your risk of spreading it on your pruning shears when you make cuts is pretty minimal. And even if you did spread it, it's usually cold enough that it's gonna just sit there. It's not gonna do anything.
So I could prune them pretty much the same as a plum tree or an apple tree, or just to try to get sunlight coming in on them.
Sure.
Right, and the other issue with pears is, like the question about sweet cherries a few minutes ago, is they tend to grow straight up. And if you can bend those branches over towards horizontal and hold them there, then that will help induce flower bud formation.
And another question on pruning. When you prune, if you prune in spring, you're kind of stimulating shoot growth around the cut. Can you break those off, when they start coming up, those little new shoots, or do you have to wait?
New shoots from where you made the cuts?
Right.
Well, if you're on a young tree, you shouldn't be getting that kind of growth. On a bigger tree, if you make a big cut, you'll get water sprouts that'll grow out of those. And on water sprouts, the best approach is to wait just until they're 3 or 4 inches, but they're still succulent, put on a pair of gloves and go rip them off, as opposed to cutting them out. But for pruning in the dormant season, like Patty described, using pruning shears will give you a better result.
Okay. One other quick question. I've got some gooseberries grown, and then also some white pines growing. And I've heard that gooseberries are a host for white pine blister rust. And then is that still a problem?
Are these black
gooseberries?
Or gooseberries? Gooseberries. Okay, gooseberries. We're thinking of currants. Yeah, no, that's it's a different. It's currants, black currants, that are the alternate host for white pine blister rust.
Well, I've got some black currants too. Does that mean I'm kind of, taking a bit of a chance?
Yep.
Well, yeah.
They are off
the illegal list, so you're not in violation of the law.
But there's still a chance I might be. Okay, that's good to know.
Good to know.
Okay, thank you.
thanks, Gary. Thanks a lot for calling. UW Extension horticulturist Terrell Roper, one of our guests. The other horticulturist, plant pathologist Patty McManus with the UW Extension, here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking fruits and fruit trees here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Terrell Roper, UW Extension horticulturist, and Patty McManus, UW Extension plant pathologist, as we visit with them today, and they are here to answer your questions about fruit. So join in at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Lots of great questions today, and moving right along. Let's go to Ron in Madison next. Ron, hi.
Thanks. An earlier caller asked about a mulberry tree that wasn't producing fruit. One reason mulberries don't produce fruit is because they're naturally dioecious, like cottonwood trees and ginkgo trees. Some of the individual trees only have male flowers. Other trees only have female flowers. No tree has both types. That's kind of rare. Most of the fruit trees are monoecious, where you have the pollen-producing part and the seed-producing part of the flower on the same trees. So where I used to live, the housemates were cutting down the male mulberry trees and leaving the female ones to produce fruit. But if you do that too much, you have to have a male mulberry tree or shrub, within a mile or less in order for the bees or the wind to carry the pollen to the female tree. So if he's got the only mature mulberry tree close by, that's the problem. Might be the solution. I know in China they have started using humans with bird feathers to move the pollen to fruit trees, because they've have areas where all the honeybees have been killed off. But, I don't know if he has a male tree or a female tree, and until somebody can figure that out for him, we don't know if we can find a solution.
Yeah.
There should be some sort of flower, though. There would have to be the male part of the flower on that tree, and without having seen it at the appropriate time of year, that's hard to know. There are other examples of fruit crops that are dioecious. There are some wild grapes that have male and female plants, and hardy kiwi vines have male and female plants as well.
Yeah, interesting. Thanks, Ron. Appreciate the call. And Randy in Avoca, you are next. Hi, Randy.
Hello. I have an apple tree that's a big old apple tree, and it's been here as long as I've been here, like 8 years, and had absolutely no care. And it's got quite a few small apples on it. But every year after year they get just about everything wrong with an apple you could have happen as far as worms and everything. Yeah. And I'm just wondering if there's any way still this year that I can save some of those apples.
Well, I think it would be an uphill battle. If it's particularly, you said it's a big old tree. I mean, we're talking more than 15 feet in a thick canopy, or
Yeah, it's probably about 15 feet tall, and it's, you know, it's just a big bush. It gets a lot of apples on it, and some of them even look fairly good, but they're always wormy and stuff, you know.
Yeah, as far as I imagine, it probably has some apple scab with all the rain that you've gotten over in that area.
I imagine, and
it's even commercial growers who have specialized sprayers and they use the very best fungicides that are available would have difficulty controlling scab at this point.
Isn't that the Japanese who actually put a cloth around
a bag
around apples on the tree?
A paper bag.
They put a paper bag right around it and attach.
Yeah. Now, the other thing to consider is the first generation of coddling moth has already been through that tree, so there are probably worms already in a lot of those apples.
See, if you were going to try, you know, it sounds like Randy is interested in, you know, he doesn't need the whole tree full, but it would be an interesting experiment. How would you bag those up, Terrell?
Yeah, there are bags that are commercially available, and they have a special system where it wraps around the pedicel of the fruit, and you put that on very early when the fruit are marble-sized, and they you staple them on, as I recall, and the apple grows inside of that. The downside to that is that the red apple cultivars don't turn red inside the bag. They have to have sunlight.
Can you pull the bag off at some point?
You pull the bag off just before you would want to harvest it, and they will redden up in a couple of weeks.
Interesting. So that might
try that on some of them.
Yeah, it might be fun to try on, you know, 10 or 20. And
if now, does the apple scab thing, does that render the apple completely unusable?
Oh, no. No, in some cases it will if it actually cracks the apple and then you get all sorts of critters going in there. But if it's just on the surface, it's superficial. You can just peel it off or you can even eat it. And bake the apples. They're just fine.
Sure.
Okay. I'm going to try bagging a few of them.
Let's see what happens. All right. Thanks, Randy. Thanks a lot for calling. All right. Paul in Kenosha. Your turn. Hi, Paul.
Hi. My raspberries, every year, the first cane, when the first year cane comes up, it grows real tall and lush and good. Second year, there's always a dieback at the top of the cane, just at the top. It's like, the canes will be different heights. It's almost like they're limited to maybe 4 feet or something like that. They can't be any taller. At the top part of the cane, they'll just never get leaves in the second year.
Yeah. Well, the good news is that shouldn't be a problem with proper care, because during the dormant season, you want to remove the top 15% to 20% of each cane anyway.
Uh-huh.
So when you prune those in the dormant season, you want to reduce the number of canes down to about 6 to 8 per running foot of row. And then you want to shorten the height of the canes by 15 to 20% of their height. And that should solve that dieback problem.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. And Jonathan in Appleton, we turn to you now. Hi, Jonathan.
Good morning. Thank you for the programming.
Sure.
Three years ago on a lark, I took a couple of, I believe they're Concord grape vines plants from a friend of mine who lives out in the country just north of Green Bay. And I tossed them in the back of the house here, not really expecting anything. Now they're well over 8 feet and just going crazy back there. I guess I need to stake them or prop them up in some way, and then is there any kind of advice you can, you know, I don't want to put a lot of time and effort into it, but it'd just be a nice pleasant surprise if they actually started producing.
Yeah, you need to get them up off the ground. So a couple of metal T-posts, fence posts, and get those up, and some wire to run the canes along is the place to begin. And then they're going to need some pruning in the dormant season. And the mistake that most people make pruning grapes is they aren't nearly vicious enough. You want to remove quite a bit of the growth. Now, we have a great publication called Growing Grapes in Wisconsin. It's available on the Extension website. And that explains some various training and pruning systems for grapes as well as other care. And the number is
A1656. A1656. And that is a very good publication. and simple to follow.
In terms of other care, Patty may have some comments about disease management.
Well, Concord grapes are native to North America, if I'm not mistaken, and that makes them right off the bat more resistant in general to pests, or they can withstand pests better than varieties that we import. So from a disease standpoint, probably little or nothing that you would have to actually treat for.
Just let them go.
Just let them go.
Great.
All right, John. Thanks a lot for calling. Michelle in Ocano Falls, your turn. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wasn't sure if I wanted to call in because all of your callers seem to at least have some knowledge about fruit plants, and I know absolutely nothing.
That's all right.
We recently purchased a property, and I had no idea what was on the property, and I have found that I have two apple trees, I have about half a dozen plum trees, and I have grapevines. And I'm wondering, is there like one general spray that I can use to protect all of the fruit plants, or do I need different kinds of sprays? Is there a really good book? Should I just go to the website? Where can I start? Because I'm very excited about having these plants, and I want to do them justice.
All right. Patty, you want to start things out here?
Well, I think I would suggest that you go to the Extension, the UW Extension website.
There's a couple of publications there that would help.
Yeah, there's we have a whole series growing blank in Wisconsin, growing grapes, growing apples. We have a series of these publications just that have general information. I think maybe this would be a good year for you to look and just see what pests are there, because certainly you don't want to go out next year or in subsequent years and just start spraying things if you don't need to be. And depending on what those apple varieties are and depending on how isolated you are from other apples, you might not have to spray very much at all, particularly if you don't mind carving around the odd worm here and there. So I guess this is your year to get educated, and next year you'll know everything about fruit crops, and you can apply for Terrell's position and do the show here.
Terrell, anything to add?
Yeah, the one thing you want to make sure you do during this next winter is to get those trees pruned. You don't want to go without pruning them for several years, or you just get a mess that's really hard to get out of.
Yeah, I've noticed that with the one apple tree, it's huge. I mean, I've never seen an apple tree look like this ever. It's got branches growing down and up and sideways and every which way there is.
Yeah, and if it's not been well taken care of for several years, and if it's a big old tree, your best bet may be to take that tree down and buy a couple of new trees on a dwarfing rootstock. They'll be much, much easier to deal with.
Yeah. Good advice, but, you know, you always hate to cut one down.
Just pick the low-hanging fruit.
Yeah. Well, you need to do some grilling, and then you've had some apple wood to smoke on your grill with.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, Michelle.
Well, thank you so much, and I will definitely be going to the website. I am so glad you guys were on today. Now I don't feel so lost.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And for that person from Illinois who had the question, and we were saying, you know, there's got to be a master gardener, University of Illinois, someone emailed in, and Maggie in Carroll County, Illinois, says that University of Illinois has an outreach, you know, obviously very similar to what we have in Wisconsin. And she even had a phone number. And so for that Illinois caller, the phone number was 815-858-2273. So it's 815-858-2273. That'll get you to the University of Illinois Extension Service, and they can help you out. Chuck in Egg Harbor. Hello.
Hi, I have a question, and it must be a lucky day because I was writing the phone number down just as a previous caller was asking about a mulberry tree.
Yeah.
That wasn't bearing fruit. Well, I have the opposite problem, and I don't want to be Mr. T here. Is there any way to sterilize the tree? It's right over a deck, and the berries are great, but they're also real messy, as you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bad news. I don't know of any way to remove mulberry fruit.
Yeah, we have one. We have one on our property. It's actually sort of half on our property and half on the neighbor's property, and it so happens to be right by our patio and steps out. And so you're constantly. I actually went. Someone gave me for a birthday present. Gave me one of these blowers, mm-hmm. and that's. I've got it nearby, and I just go out there and blow them off the steps and the patio and the tables.
That works until someone steps on them.
Yeah, Yeah, yes, you have to do it in the morning before you get started every day. But you're right, Carol. I've thought about it. It's the Orioles love it. It's great. Yeah. Birds love it.
Yeah.
But I'm afraid you're out of luck, Chuck. I'm sorry for you. Sorry for that, but I can certainly relate. Right. Daryl Roper and Patty McManus with us today as we talk all things fruit here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Happy to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. We're talking fruits today with Terrell Roper, UW Extension horticulturist, and Patty McManus, UW Extension plant pathologist. Pleased to have them here and happy to have you listening in. Give us a call with your questions at 800-642-1234, in Madison at 263-1890, and lots of callers online. So we'll go right to Dick in Lake Villa. Dick, hello.
Hello.
What can we do? Yeah, what can we do for you?
Now that the flood has receded, and I look at my strawberry bed, looks like a total disaster area. Is there a difference this year than any of the other previous years? That should I leave it alone and hope they'll come back, or should I just dig it up and get rid of it?
How long were they underwater?
Oh, about a week and a half, but that's no longer than it was the last two times. So.
Yeah,
the only difference this time is that everything had berries, and they were just about ready to get ripe. So the berries were floating.
Yeah, I wouldn't eat the fruit that's been in the floodwater, obviously.
Well, there isn't any fruit.
But I don't know. I'd probably give them another chance and see if they'll make it through the winter. You've not lost anything. And then if you wanted to set aside a new spot and prepare it this fall, you could order some plants and have them ready to go in the spring. And if these don't do so well, you'd have some new plants for the future.
Yeah. Flooding.
Oh, gee, thanks. Yeah. Nothing like encouragement.
Put them on high ground.
That's a great idea.
Three floods already, and now we want another one.
Oh, no. Let's hope that we don't have that.
Yeah, the other thing to consider about strawberries, just as a general thing, is that the local strawberries this year are maybe not the same, as high quality as they typically are. And part of that has to do with all of the rain that we've had.
And just the opposite. Boy, this thing was loaded this year. At first, I thought I wasn't going to get anything because it was so cold.
Mm-hmm.
But then they started blooming on there, and man, I had berries all over the place. The only trouble was they were just about getting ready to turn red.
Yeah.
When the floods came.
Yeah.
And that was the end of it.
When we get a wet year like this, the flavor of the strawberries isn't as good as it would be in a drier year. Part of that has to do with losing the aromatics out of the strawberries.
Well, the ones I got were pretty good.
Good.
I didn't get very many.
Well, I tell you, and it is true that the berries don't seem to be as tasty this year.
Yeah, maybe the cloudy weather, we haven't made as much sugar, and then with all the rain, we lose that aromatic fraction. And so much of the flavor of the fruit is actually from the aroma.
Yeah.
It has been a tough year for commercial strawberry growers. A disease that has shown up because of all this rain has been leather rot. And leather rot, not only does it cause a soft spot on the fruit, it imparts a really, really foul, bitter taste.
Oh.
And you can just have one bad berry in a batch of jam, and it throws off the taste of the jam. And so it's kind of a subtle symptom, the rot, and so it's easy to overlook it and pick it and think that you've got a good berry and you don't. So,
no.
So give the growers a break this year. Go out and be loyal to them again next year. It has to be better.
It has to be better. Dan in Plymouth, your turn. Hi, Dan.
See, I have a suggestion for that lady that called just before the news about her overgrown apple tree.
Okay.
I would suggest having her limb all the small branches out of it. Just leave the main, heavier boughs, you know, and let new growth start on it and go from there. And And if she wants to go a little further, she could use those heavier boughs and probably start grafting other apples onto that tree. And I've got a question.
Yes.
My neighbor's got an apricot tree. It's an old domestic one. Geez, the thing is about 18 inches in diameter or so, 12 inches, whatever. It's an old one. Anyway, could I graft some of those branches onto a sterile plum tree? Not a plum tree, but a peach tree.
Peach tree.
Peach. They're... Some of those, within the genus Prunus, and that's the plums and the apricots and peaches and cherries, there is some graft compatibility across species. For example, almond onto peach works wonderfully well. And I have to admit, I don't know if apricot on peach is one that would work. But certainly, you can buy apricot rootstocks and you could graft some of, you could take buds off of this big tree and put it on apricot rootstocks.
Trouble is, I buy apricot rootstocks. I've tried Moon Glow and I don't know what all else, and they just don't seem to weather.
Yeah, the Moon Gold and Sun Gold are not very high-quality apricots.
And what's your apricot recommendation, Terrell?
The Harval, the Harrow series.
That's right.
Harval, Harlane, Harcot.
Those would be what? The ones to grow?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, but are they frost-resistant up in this area?
Plymouth?
What county is that?
I would say we're in Zone 4. We're in Sheboygan County, right on almost on the lake.
I would think so, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And as far as cutting back that apple tree heavy like that, you certainly get a proliferation of new growth that comes off of it. But oftentimes when that happens, we lose the structural strength of the tree. Because when you have a knuckle growth like that, where the small branch intersects the large branch, that's not structurally strong. And so a few years hence, when you get a crop of fruit or a crop or a load of snow on that branch, that's where it will break.
Mm. Thanks a lot for calling, Dan. I appreciate your call, too. And Cora in Algoma is up next with a question. Hi, Cora.
Hi. My daughter has a raspberry patch that she would like to remove, and I hate to lose my raspberries, so I'd like to move some of the canes out to our place. But she has, it looks like a beetle in the ground, and then if she doesn't dust the berries, there's a little tiny worm in the berry, you know, when you pull it off inside there. If I move those canes, am I moving the insects also?
Probably.
Okay.
I think we don't know what bug that is.
Yeah, I've never seen little worms inside of raspberries. I see the little picnic beetles often.
There's these black, I am assuming there's some kind of beetles. They're in the ground. You turn the ground over and they're thick in there. And so I didn't know if they were in the cane or just in the ground. And
they wouldn't be in the cane.
There are some beetles that'll get into the cane. But I don't think they grow on the ground. That's a really good question for Phil Pelletieri next time he's on.
Yeah. You can email or take a look at the Insect Diagnostic Lab. Go to the University of Wisconsin Insect Diagnostic Lab, and there's a place to email Phil right on that website. And Phil would have a quick answer for you.
Yep. Okay. Can you give me the website?
I don't know it off the top of my head, but go to University of Wisconsin Insect Diagnostic Lab. Just put that in a search engine, and you're going to go right to it.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. I should have that. I should know that right off the top of my head, but I don't. Frank in Cedarburg, your turn. Hi, Frank.
Hi there. Have a question now. I've got a mucho that was planted on M26 2 years ago. It leafed out very well, but the problem is this spring, the ground seems to be awfully wet. Is it by any chance choking off the leaf structure? Really, the leaf structure so far is very spindly, and it's not really expanding like it should be. So I'm assuming that I've got too much ground water problems. Now, could that be that effect?
That certainly could be the problem. M26 is a rootstock that's susceptible to Phytophthora, a soil-borne fungus. Actually, there's a variety of different species of Phytophthora that can infect apple roots.
Okay.
And the spindly, sparse growth, if the leaves turn color early in the fall instead of October, you know, if they start turning color in August or early September, that would be more evidence that it's Phytophthora. And I would encourage you to maybe get down and look at the crown of the tree, so the very base of the trunk, and squeeze around on that. See if that's firm. If that's firm, your tree might have a chance of recovering because roots can regenerate. But if that crown is soft and squishy, or if you have a knife and you poke in there and it's all orange and rotten, then the tree might be a goner.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Frank. Lou in Milwaukee, on to you. Hi, Lou.
Hello, how are we doing?
Good.
I have a question about a fig tree, and this has been bugging me for about 4, maybe 5 years.
Okay.
Like 5 years ago, this tree bore figs. Every year since that, I've been looking at the, well, it's a series of trees surrounding a building, fig trees, and they have yet to bear fruit. What's going on? I thought maybe a fruit tree was consistent, like year to year.
Well, they are, except we need to understand that figs are really not hardy in Wisconsin.
Oh.
When I first moved here to Madison, I lived next door to an older Italian gentleman who had a fig tree in his backyard, but it was planted in a box. And to overwinter it, he would, in the fall, he'd begin to bend it over slowly until he got it all pushed over in this box, and then he'd cover it over with leaves and protect it through the winter, and then in the spring he'd take the covering off and eventually get it stood back up. And about every once in 3 to 5 years he'd get a crop. If we had a hot summer and a long season. So for the figs that you're seeing, I'm assuming if they're surviving the winter that somebody's protecting them somehow, because otherwise they would freeze in our winter.
Protecting them how? Because no one, they're monster trees. I mean, they must be 40 feet tall, 30, 40 feet.
Well, if they're just out to the elements, then the flower buds are probably getting frozen during the midwinter, because figs are really not hardy, even in zone 5.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Patty in Stone Lake, your turn. Hi, Patty.
Hi, what a great show.
Thank you.
I have two questions. We have about probably 24 apple trees that we've planted over the last 20 years. And this year, for the first year, we noticed the cedar waxwings coming through and eating all the blossoms. And we've seen the waxwings before, but never seen them eat the blossoms. And we assume that for every blossom they eat, that's an apple we don't get, and wonder, you know, if other birds eat those blossoms also. And then because we've planted these trees over 20 years, we've not kept track of what type they are. So I'm wondering if there's an easy way to identify them.
Well, let me answer the second question first. There's not an easy way to identify the apples. Your best bet is to find a commercial apple grower who's been at it for a number of years up in your area and take some fruit to him when they're mature in the fall and see if he can assign a name to them. That's not a service that I can provide. Plus,
okay.
I'm not going to be here in September. with the cedar waxwing that are presumably eating the flowers, I've never heard of that. That's most interesting. But you are right. For every flower that one of the birds would eat, that's one less fruit. But that's not necessarily a bad thing, provided they don't eat every flower, because you want apples spaced out on the tree so they're no closer than about 6 to 8 inches apart. So they maybe just did a nice free thinning job for you.
Yeah, and they're beautiful, so we're fine with it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, as long as you get some fruit. Wow, what a great thinning system.
It's really a pretty small percentage of flowers that end up being fruit, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe 5%.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So there you have it, Patty.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. We got an email from Nan, who bought a property with oak and white pine woods, and the previous owner had planted apple, cherry, and pear near the edge of the woods and about 50 feet from a ravine and trout stream. How likely is it that these trees will survive? Some have made it 5 to 7 years and are a bit scraggly. We've got Wolf River apple, Parsons apple, Door County cherry. He's got about a dozen varieties in there. Any easy ways to help them survive that don't involve daily maintenance? We can't compete with the deer, Nan says.
Well, yeah, fighting the deer off is an uphill battle. And the really, there are a couple of kind of home remedy things that will reduce the injury, but the only sure way to keep deer out is to fence the orchard with a high fence.
Yeah.
But there are, if you get some little motel size bars of soap, leave the wrapper on, poke a hole through the bar of soap and hang it in the trees, and you'd want one or two per tree. Smelly soap is better than non-smelly soap, and that will deter the deer for a while. You can hang things like human hair. Go to your barber or hairdresser, and you can hang that in an old nylon stocking in the tree, and that will keep the deer away. Really, the most ingenious way to keep deer out of an area that I know of is to keep a dog where the deer are, a largish dog. Deer and dogs don't mix very well, and the dogs always win.
And in terms of just the care or maintenance, as we talked earlier, you've got a whole series of UW Extension publications on growing apple trees, growing cherry trees, and so forth and so on. And my recommendation, I think, would be to go to those publications as a good starting point.
That's the place to begin.
Yep, that's the place. So go to that UW Extension publications website, and you'll get lots of great information.
A URL, learningstore.uwex.edu, or just search engine for University of Wisconsin Extension.
Publications, yep. Vincent Custer's up next. Hi, Vince.
Hi there. Surprised I got on so soon. I called six times. I'm calling to bring up some topics that you, Larry, have and several other programs, and unfortunately they never get brought together. You've had people talk about birds, and I grew up I was born in 35, so I grew up when there were lots of birds. Every morning they would be just ringing in the treetops in song in spring and also coming through in the fall. We don't get that anymore. As your ornithologists have said, we've lost sometimes 80% of some of these birds. So no wonder we could grow apples and all these in the past without a lot of the insects that now just get taken over. And it's been proven that when you put up nets over huge areas of forest and keep the birds out, the forest trees really suffer. So one of the problems is that we don't have the natural predators. The other thing is that there are fruitless mulberries, and the third thing is that the cedar waxwings don't eat the fruit, they eat just the petals. And so it's not harming the tree at all to have cedar waxwings come in.
Oh, yeah. Now, some good points.
The one thing they might do, if they eat the petals are what attract the honeybees, the pollinators, mm-hmm. to the flowers. And so if they're not getting pollinators there, we still don't get a fruit.
Yeah.
But that's good, great information.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, Vince. Thank you for calling. Good points. Larry in Brookfield, it's your turn. Hi, Larry.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I got about 5 plum trees, and for the last few years, I lose most of my crop to brown rot. One year I tried some Captain later on in the season, but it didn't seem to help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Captan is somewhat effective on brown rot, but as you've discovered, it's not perfect by any means. You might consider brown rot as a fungus that can become established during bloom, and then it remains somewhat dormant or latent until the fruit actually start ripening, and then it wakes up and starts rotting the fruit. So you might consider applying a fungicide during bloom and then again later as the fruit are starting to ripen. And the active ingredients that I have seen in garden stores and hardware stores and so forth that would be more effective, one is myclobutanil, and that would be myclobutanil, myclobutanil, And another one is tebuconazole, T-E-B-U, see, tebuconazole. I have to write things down as I spell. I'm not very good at that. So those, that's a different mode of action for fungicides. Might be a better solution to your problem. Also, be sure to practice sanitation. So if you do have brown rot out there and you say, well, I don't want to eat those fruit, they're rotten, don't just leave them out there. Clean them up, get them away from the trees, because that will be your source of fungus for the next year.
Yeah, I used to get a lot of plums. I used to dry them, but last half a dozen years, you know, you think you're going to get fruit and all of a sudden, or sometimes they even rot in the middle of summer before they even start to ripen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But last year they were coming along pretty good because it was dry, and then we had all that rain in August.
Yeah.
Just time to ripen, and then the fruit split open. Mm.
Does thinning the crop help, Patty, so you don't have fruit touching?
Sure. Yep. And and proper pruning during the winter months just to have a nice open canopy.
All right.
Okay, thanks.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. You know, the tart cherry crop in Door County, I've been hearing rumors that it is going to be a real skimpy year for Door County cherries. Is that correct?
That's the word I had. I was up a couple weeks ago and talked to a few growers, and they're not sure exactly why. Last winter was not unusually cold. About the only abnormality that they could identify was that in January there were a couple of days when the temperature was about 40 degrees, and then very rapidly, within 24 hours, it dropped to minus 12. And so that may have been part of the problem. Having said that, the apple trees didn't seem to be bothered by that, and so the professionals up there are scratching their heads. I don't know whether, Terrell, if you know more. It's not just in Door County, also it's over in Oconto and Marinette.
Hmm. And I understand the Michigan crop is down some as well. And I wondered if the conditions during bloom were good for pollination. If it were cloudy or windy or wet, then the insects that pollinate that crop wouldn't be out doing their job.
Yeah. So, and Bob in Oak Creek, you had a quick comment?
Yeah, for keeping deer away from my crops. I did this to keep the tulips from being eaten up this year. DVDs and CDs, the kind that they send to me free from America Online and all these other companies.
Yeah.
I use a small drill, put a hole in near the edge of it, add about 6 feet of nylon fish line, hang them from a tree. They spin unbelievably. And this year we got tulips, and since then we haven't seen deer in the yard in the rest of our garden.
Yeah, wildlife usually will habituate to those kinds of things. They will also help to keep birds away from like cherry trees or blueberry mm-hmm. bushes.
Yeah, so that can work. I thank you very much for that tip, Bob. And Terrell and Patty, well, Patty, you'll be back, I hope.
I'll be back. I'm not going anywhere.
You're not going anywhere. Terrell, when are you leaving town?
Late July.
Late July. Well, I tell you what, it's been a real pleasure to have you on the program, and I know our listeners are going to miss you, and I'll certainly miss you, and I know Patty will, too.
I sure will.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure working in Wisconsin, and it's always fun to be on the show because we never know what the next call is going to be, and that's an awful lot of fun.
Yeah, but it'll be fun to go back. Utah's home for you, so.
It is.
Well, thanks again. Terrell Roper, UW Extension horticulturist. Patty McManus, UW Extension plant pathologist, our guest. And Patty, I'm sure we'll be back, and hopefully we'll have a replacement for Terrell as well. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.